Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 82 of season 10 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Andy Golding of Blueprint Review. Welcome back to the show once again, Andy.
Thank you very much. Good to be back, Rob.
I hope you don't need to like take a little break in the middle here, you know. Even great men need to be.
Yeah, I've certainly got a note about that line later.
It's a great line. We'll get there. We'll get there.
Yes.
But there's no question about the fact that is a great line. It's a perfect Jerry Stiller line, also.
Yeah.
It's actually very funny. I just recently saw the new documentary about Jerry Stiller. Have you had a chance to see that yet?
No, I didn't even know there was one.
So it just came out like a week or two ago. And it's Ben Stiller directed it. And it's called Stiller and Mira, Nothing is Lost. It's all about his childhood and his parents, the work that they did, you know, as comedians working together, stuff like that. It was great. It really was. Yeah. And I was waiting the whole time for them to talk about Pelham. And they actually have a few things that they talk about Pelham towards the end, which was great. That was really fun seeing it. I mean, one of the bits of trivia that I got from it, I will hold off for another, I think 2 weeks, and I'll mention it when it actually happens in the
interesting. I'll keep an eye out for that.
Yeah. That's gonna be fun to talk about. But so they talked about the fact that he got that how he got the role and stuff like that. So it was fun to see the connection. You know, as I know that I've been talking about Jerry Stiller,
and yeah.
Well, it was fun seeing him in all their home movies, or when he was on Ed Sullivan and stuff like that, you know, without a mustache and stuff like that. So, you know, he looked very different, but I never knew that he was such a comedian.
Nice.
You know, I just thought of him as, okay, he's the, you know, George's father or, on the King of Queens. That's it. You know,
yeah.
Apparently there is a history there. Is great to know about. So minute 82 begins with Daniels giving a new order. It ends with Green getting off the train.
Yeah.
So we ended things yesterday with Garber debating with Daniels. What are they going to do here? How are they going to deal with this situation? Are they going to try and stay ahead of the train or wait for them to start moving and, you know, they decide that they're gonna take off. So as they start driving, we hear Daniels then say, "Tell the sergeant to hold the men here until further word." And then we hear someone say, "Yes, sir." And then they just take off from there. Now, yesterday we talked about the fact that it was a CB that. That Garber was talking to Rico on, and it was the phone. It was a phone receiver. It wasn't a CB. Oh. I never thought about that, but I rewatched that part in between yesterday and today, and realized that I had made a mistake.
Oh,
it was the phone that we were talking about, which was, you know. It was funny that we were talking about it and didn't even realize that that's what it was.
Yes. Yeah, it's funny. I think my brain had just filled it in as being the CV. And...
Yeah, me too. Me too. And as they're about to get into traffic, you see a truck in front of them. And it says on it, Wall Street Mail. So unfortunately, I did a search for that, and the only things I found was the email address for the Wall Street Journal. I couldn't figure out what that means. Is it mail that's only delivered into around Wall Street? Is it maybe it's a courier service between offices on Wall Street? That's as far as my thinking goes.
Yeah, it's a shame we're not having much luck with tracking down these things written on the side of trucks.
Well, it's hard to find things after 51 years.
Yeah.
Especially since apparently most of these things are obsolete today. But yeah, but it's always nice getting a quick shot of New York City in 1974.
Yeah.
And then the shot changes, and we see Green put a you know put some pipes together, continuing with what he was doing not that long ago. And then we hear him say, "It's like a glove." So it's very funny that he uses that phrase here, because obviously these guys are all wearing gloves. Even Garber's wearing gloves. I mean, this is the assumption is this is late fall. That's what I would think. So it's getting chilly out there, I guess. So I decided to do a little bit of research on the origin of the term "fits like a glove."
I can't believe I missed that one. I was trying to predict what you were
And
going
it
to
goes
do
much further back than OJ.
there. Yeah. First, you can't help it, can you? First thing that comes to mind.
That's right. I still think it's very funny that I actually just rewatched today The Terminator, and one of the things in the trivia on IMDb that it talks about was is that the original choice to play the Terminator was O.J. Simpson, but they basically said that he was too nice of a guy to that people wouldn't believe that he could be a Terminator, and that's just hilarious to think about.
What comes to my mind is there was an old episode of Whose Line Is It Anyway? I think it was on, where they had to come up with unlikely advertising slogans, and it was the O.J. Simpson glove store. If the glove fits, we'll take it back and change
Okay, that's a good one too. I mean, it sounded a lot did a lot of stuff at the time also.
Yeah.
They had him as a they had one of the characters pretending to playing the part of OJ, and they're at a football game, and he takes the whiteboard and is trying to show like, okay, this guy's gonna go here and this guy's gonna go there, and he inadvertently writes there, "I did it." People had a lot of fun with that sort of stuff. It's still even in the recent Naked Gun remake, they
Yeah.
alluded to it.
Yeah.
They only alluded to it once, so maybe they should have done it more, but it was still pretty funny.
Yeah.
The truth is, I wasn't even a fan of the latest Naked Gun, but that was one of the funniest lines in there from my
Yeah,
perspective.
I haven't seen it, but it was right there in the trailer, wasn't it, that
I don't even remember. I don't watch trailers, so
joke? Oh.
because trailers are spoilers.
Yeah, I don't tend to watch them, but that was one that I it
Okay,
was on
makes sense.
all over the place, yeah.
Makes sense. In movies, let's put it this way: as you and I both know, in movies that are generally not that great and they're comedies, they put the best lines in the trailer to get you to go,
Yeah.
get you in your seat.
Yeah,
That's the
which ruins it. What I hate is even more is that there are some DVD artworks which completely spoil the film, or often like DVD menus have a picture of like from the end of the film that completely ruins it for anyone who hasn't seen it. There are a couple that spring to mind, but I don't want to drop spoilers here for anyone who's listening for.
Right, that's true. Again, it could be stuff that everyone already knows. So that's
Yeah.
not like I remember I have a friend who would go out and buy scores of from movie scores before the movie came out, and he went and got the score for The Phantom Menace back in 1999, and he was really upset because one of the tracks is called Qui-Gon's Death or Qui-Gon's Funeral or something like that. Like, hello.
Yeah, you have to be careful because sometimes even looking at cast lists for things, if you see the characters they play and you suddenly find that there's like a dual role that you're not supposed to know about or something like that, that can be a big spoiler.
It's a problem. For those of us who like to be surprised,
Yeah.
it's never good to Yeah, some people don't care if they get stuff spoiled for them, but that's just.
I've never understood that thing of people who don't mind knowing. There was like whenever I used to watch things that would have like a next week on part at the end of an episode, I would always switch it off when it got to the next week because I wanted to be surprised what was going to be on the next episode. But then they started doing some shows started doing tonight on. I can remember Baywatch used to do it tonight on Baywatch, and they would just show you basically the entire plot in just like short form before you watch the actual episode.
Yeah, that could be annoying. I can understand that too. So like I a long time ago stopped watching trailers because of that. If it's a movie that I know will come out in like 6 months, I don't mind watching the trailer because at that point I'm probably not going to remember too much about it. I'm not going to dive too much into it, but I the perfect example that I always bring up is Terminator Genesis. That I was one of the few people who didn't see the trailer beforehand, so when I watched the movie, I was really surprised by a big shock that happens, in the middle of the movie. And like I mentioned it to a friend of mine, he's like, "Oh, I've already known about that for 3 months because I saw it on the trailer." And I'm like, "Boy, am I glad I didn't watch the trailer." Okay, so let's go back to fits like a glove. When do you think the phrase fits like a glove started being
That fits
used?
like a glove. Right. It sounds to me like it doesn't, it sounds like a fairly modern phrase to me. So I'm gonna say like the maybe like the 1910s.
It goes all the way back to the mid-1700s.
Oh, I've done it again. I forgot. This was something else I kept doing the last time I was on. I kept way underestimating how old
Okay, but
things
again,
are.
in all fairness, I think most people would feel that way. Like if you were to ask me that same question, I wouldn't have even thought of going that far back either. It's just because I have the answers that it makes it sound like I'm all-knowing, but truthfully, I'm not. That's what doing research does, gives you the information. So yeah, the earliest known documented use was in a novel in from 1771, which was called the Expedition of Humphrey Clinker. And they mentioned there that someone wore boots that fit like a glove.
That's an odd context to use it in.
I mean the phrase means that it's something that is snug, comfortable, and perfectly conforming to the shape. Right. And I mean now it's just used as a metaphor. Unless you're in Judge Ito's courtroom. Then the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. And then I start thinking about the glove itself. How far back do you think the idea of a glove goes back?
Oh, gloves, right. Well, I know that it's before the 1700s at least now.
I will give you that. Yes, it did.
gloves. I'm going to say they go back. People have been wearing gloves for a long time, haven't they? Let's go a few more centuries back. Let's say the 1300s.
Oh, it goes further back than that. It goes all the way back into
Oh,
the ancient Egypt.
I've done it again.
Yeah.
The Egyptians were wearing gloves, were
That's
they?
it. The Egyptians used them for people who were doing labor and when the various priests were handling different objects and stuff like that. So it was there to protect their hands and stuff like that. In Homer's Odyssey, Laertes wore gloves to avoid brambles. In Rome, the in Greece and Rome, the aristocrats wore them to signify their social standing and stuff like that. And Roman gladiators in combat would wear gloves also in order to help them get better grips on their weapons and also
Yeah, sure
not
thing.
get as injured and stuff like that. Obviously, if you're talking about knights all wore gloves also. Obviously, gloves of like chainmail and whatever.
Yeah, like big gun kind of things, yeah.
Yeah, and then in the 19th century, someone named a man named William Stuart Halsted invented the idea of rubber gloves in 1894.
Oh.
And the idea was to protect hands from harsh chemicals and stuff like that. But they realized that using gloves could help with so many different things. It can fend off infections after operations and different ways to protect the patient and stuff like that. And it all happened around the same time that they started talking about germ theory, which have you ever seen the movie The Story of Louis Pasteur?
Yes, I
Like
have, yeah.
he's 36. So there they talk all about the whole fact that about germs and stuff like that.
It's been a long time since I saw that, but it's Paul Mooney, isn't it?
Yes. I think he does an amazing job in that movie.
Yeah, I remember it being very good.
Yeah. And yeah, so that's about gloves. But yeah, it goes back really, really far. So Green says that putting these pipes in fits like a glove, and then Blue, who's standing next to him, goes, "Is it gonna come away clean?" And he goes, "Nope, it's gonna work all right." So it's interesting that Blue is a little skeptical about this whole thing, and for those wondering, Blue is. I had a comment from somebody that I should start using a shirt. I should remind people all the time who each of the actors are who play the various characters, because
Ah, yeah, so Blue Robert
it's
Shaw.
confusing hearing me say blue and green and all that stuff. So yeah.
Yeah.
So for those wondering, Mr. Blue is Robert Shaw, and Mr. Green is Martin Balsam. So that's a shout out to you. My frequent guest who commented to me about this. You know who you are. I'll try to keep remembering to do it. That's all I can promise, that I will try. And at this point, they hear on the radio, we hear Rico's voice saying, "Command Center to Pelham 123. Command Center to Pelham 123. Come in, Pelham." And Malton Balsam Green says, "Who's that?" Which is, it's really funny. It's like, we've been talking to the same guy for the last hour and a half. Who the hell is this? And then Blue Robert Shaw says, "Give me the mic." And he hands him the microphone. He goes, "Here." He answers and he goes, "This is Pelham. What happened to Garber?" And then we get a shot of Rico, and he goes, "Even great men have to pee."
It is. It's a beautifully delivered line. It
Completely.
also occurred to me, it sounds like a good title for a hard-boiled film noir.
Correct. All right. Well, now we're going to go to something that you probably didn't anticipate. When did the term pee start being used?
Oh, no. Here we go. I'm gonna say like the 1950s, and you're gonna tell me it was coined by Christ.
No, it doesn't go on that. It doesn't go back that far, but it is much further than 1950. That's
Yeah,
true.
let's say the P the 1700s.
No, it's even further back than that. So the noun pee, meaning urine, was first recorded in 1483. It originally started to, it only meant urine itself, And then it started being used afterwards, in the mid 1700s. See, there you were right about that. That it was the act of urination. That was so you have the difference between the noun and the verb, I guess, from that perspective.
So you could only take a pee later down the line unless
That's
you
right.
were actually physically boxing it up and walking away with
Correct.
it.
And the there are people that say that it's a shortening of the term pee-pee, which is a French sound that children made when urinating. They would say pee-pee. I don't know.
That also later became slang for the penis, didn't it, as well?
Yes, that is correct. That's correct. I don't know if it's spelled the same way or not.
No.
That I'm not. Well, I don't know it's slang. I think it's more that it was used as a way to describe it to children. And I think that's what it came down to. Maybe a colloquialism of how to describe the penis to children. Something like that. I don't know. That I didn't look up.
No, I don't want that in my search history, really.
No, definitely not. And once again, as we mentioned yesterday, we see a shot in the background of the clock, and it still says that it's around 3:40, which again shows that they really knew what they were doing with the continuity here. Yeah, but again, it's a great line. Even great men need to be. And then he continues and says, "Just letting you know, the track's cleared all the way to South Ferry." And Blue Robert Shaw thanks him, and he goes, "Thank you. Give the lieutenant my regards." I always like the fact that Brits mispronounce lieutenant and call it lieutenant, which
Yeah, I don't know why we say that. It's
I don't know either.
weird.
I do not have an answer to that. So.
It was I can remember the first time it was watching Columbo when I first heard it pronounced lieutenant, and I thought that makes more sense. What are we doing? Why are we saying lieutenant over here?
Yeah, I don't know. So Mr. Blue Robert Shaw says, "Give the lieutenant my regards." And I love Rico's response. He goes, "You can do it yourself at the arraignment."
Yes, another great line. I've really come to appreciate Rico as a character.
Yes. And Blue is not happy about it, and he just goes over and out
Yes.
and just hangs up. And then he turns to Green Martin Balsam and says, "Best get going." He goes, "All right." And then Blue Robert Shaw turns around and screams, "All right, Mr. Brown." And then what's interesting is we see both Brown and Gray basically pack up their stuff and decide to leave the train. And as they're getting ready to leave, so Gray turns around and gives everyone a farewell kiss, which it's funny seeing Hector Elizondo doing that. I think it works. And then Blue is while he's on the train, he goes, "You will all remain seated. That means nobody is to get up." Okay. And at that point, Green and Blue get off the train, and that's where this minute ends. Did you have anything you wanted to add about this particular minute?
I don't think so. No, the only note I made was, why does he is he why does he say that means nobody is to get up? It seems redundant. I guess he's just underlining the importance of it, but
No, he's
how
also
else are you
trying
going
to.
to take the phrase "you all remain seated"?
I think he's trying to instill fear in them. So what's the best way to do it? Threaten them. Even though anyone who's seen the movie knows that it's a threat that means absolutely nothing. So, what can I tell you? So, is there anything else you want to talk about in this
I don't think
particular?
so. I have done another list, though, that we for today to replace what would have been Blue Day Tuesday, wouldn't it? It's but I struggled to put together five Robert Shaw films, so I certainly have another five. So today we haven't seen The Mayor, but I come when I came last time we talked about The Mayor and how he's one of my favourite characters.
And how
So
he
I'll put.
leaves New York and goes to be the mayor of Gotham.
He's typecast as mayors. That's interesting actually, because my list is five great mayors from films,
Okay.
and I could have had him as the mayor of Gotham in here, but he isn't on my list. And he certainly, if I'd included Pelham, he certainly would have been in this list. But no, I've gone for five different ones. So number five is Gene Lockhart's mayor in the Danny Kaye film, The Inspector General. Yeah, he plays a very good corrupt mayor in that. Speaking of corrupt mayors, and as a I can't do another Robert Shaw list, but I can have Jaws again. And Jaws has Murray Hamilton's mayor, who I think is a bigger villain than the shark to me. I think he's the villain of the piece to me when I
That's
watch
right.
Jaws.
It's not as if you just scream Barracuda and everything's fine.
Number three is a bit of a wild card. This is Do the Right Thing, and Ossie Davis's character, the mayor, who is not an actual mayor, but he's treated as such in a way. Number two is the literally two-faced mayor from Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas. And number one is from what I sometimes think this might be my favorite Preston Sturges film. It's The Great McGinty. Brian Dunleavy plays McGinty, the bum who's drawn into political corruption and eventually rises to the position of mayor.
Interesting. I haven't seen as many Preston Sturges movies as I should. I have seen The Great McGinty. That I have seen, yes.
I really, they tend to get a lot of people. You think of Preston Sturges, you think of wacky slapstick and stuff like that. And I quite appreciate the more slightly more restrained ones from earlier in his career. And that was his first one as director. And it does have little bits of slapstick in, but they're not as wild and crazy as they get later down the line.
Right, that's true. That's true. My favorite connection to Preston Sturges is have you ever seen the movie Grand Canyon?
Yes,
No.
with Steve Martin
Steve
and
Martin, Kevin Kline.
Kevin Kline, yeah.
Right. So at the very end of the movie, so Steve Martin is talking to Kevin Kline. They're best friends, and he's talking to him, and he starts telling him a story of Preston Sturges's movie. Oh, I can't remember the name of it right now.
I can't remember which one he's talking about. Is it Sullivan's Travels?
Yes, that's right. He talks about that. Thank you. He talks about Sullivan's Travels, and Kevin Kline's character says, "No, I never saw it." And he goes, "You know, your problem is you don't see enough movies." And he goes, "All of life's riddles are answered in the movies." And to me, that's my favorite movie quote
Yeah, that is
because
a great line.
it fits so much into my perspective on it. You know, I just think everyone just hasn't seen enough movies. That's what it comes down
Yes. Yeah, I even feel that way about myself.
to.
I can never see too many films.
Yeah, we'll go rewatch all those James Bond movies, but whatever.
Yes.
Excellent. All right. Did you have anything else you want to talk about with this minute?
I don't think so, no.
All right. So we will once again play Name That Remake, and hopefully you will do as well as you did yesterday. Even though it won't be the Hitcher again.
Yes.
That I can guarantee. All right, so let us spin the wheel and see what we get. And around and around and around. Okay, So the original came out in 1947, and the remake came out in 1994. And it's about a little girl who attends a parade and meets a man who she believes can do magical things for her.
Oh. Okay. Nine 47 and 94. No, I can't bring this one to mind. It sounds
Okay.
like a film I would watch,
I'm
but
assuming you, my assumption is you've seen this, or you've definitely heard of it. There's no question about
yeah.
that. Okay, so all right, I'll give you another clue. The movie takes starts off taking place in on Thanksgiving. A
Thanksgiving.
story that takes place on Thanksgiving and deals with a parade and meeting a hero.
Yeah, I can't. I'm sure I'm going to kick myself, but I can't think what it is.
So the original is
Oh, no, I've got it. I've got it. Of course it is. Is it Miracle on 34th Street?
Yes, it is. Excellent.
Yes, of course it is. It's Thanksgiving through me because it's of course Christmas, but yeah.
Exactly. So yes, it is Miracle on 34th Street. The original came out in 1947, with Edmund Gwenn, Maureen O'Hara, as the two main characters. You have Natalie Wood playing the young girl. You have Gene Lockhart as the judge. I'm a bigger fan of the original than the remake. The remake was
Yeah, I've no, I really I love the original. I've never seen the
The
remake.
remake was directed by, well, sorry, it was starring Richard Attenborough.
Yeah, I do know, and it's the little girl who was in Matilda, isn't it? It's the girl in that, I think.
The little girl is Mara Wilson.
Yeah, I think that's actually went on to play Matilda, yeah.
Yeah, it actually has a pretty interesting cast. It includes Elizabeth Perkins, Dylan McDermott, J.T. Walsh, James Remar, Jane Leaves, William Wyndham, and Robert Prosky, Mary McCormick. Wow, Allison Janney.
Oh wow, it's a good cast, but
Yeah.
I think I've never seen it just because I think shall I watch it and then I watch the original instead.
Exactly.
Maybe I should give it a go this year and we're getting near Christmas, aren't we?
Well, of course, because Thanksgiving was last week, so Christmas is just 3 weeks away for you. For me, that I don't celebrate it. So
Yeah, sure.
I know when it
Yeah.
is. That's it.
Well, I've got no religious ties to it. I just I'm part of the big commercialized side of things.
That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
To each his own. There's no problem with that either way. The way I look at it, and I mean, this particular season will end 3 days after Christmas because it ends on the 28th. So, we might actually even get the Gesundheit scene on Christmas itself.
Oh, that'd be good.
Think, yeah, I'm pretty sure that the Gesundheit scene is on Christmas.
Wow, you didn't even plan it like that.
I didn't even plan it. Nope. Just happened. Fell out that way. We'll have to wait and see. All right. So, thank you once again for playing. Nicely done.
I got there in the end today,
You what?
didn't I? I got there in
Yes,
the
you did.
end
You did.
today.
Before I even had to start giving you a little bit of hint, so that's good. All right, so Andy, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Andy Golway?
Yes, you can find my writings on over at Blueprint Review, where I write about upcoming films and older releases and make a lot of lists.
And you, are you checking them twice?
No, once is enough
Once,
for me.
okay, that's fine, that's fair. Excellent. All right, so finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Remnant. You can find me on my website, movieremnant.com. You could find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow,
Isn't tight.